April 4th, 1979, tape number 2, talking to Stanley Dale and Manly.
Yeah.
Huh. So Wolverines, huh?
Yeah. Another funny thing on them Wolverines, well, that same, I had a cabin about 10 miles from there, like one of my trapper's cabins and, of course, relief cabins where I stayed. And I made a run over my line. I went the whole line and all my cabins, and that trip over, I got 22 or 24 marked, and I forget what it was, and I skinned them out, all out, you know, and I took all the carcasses, and I just piled them alongside the outside the cabin. I figured if I ever run short of dog feed, you know, you cook them up with some cornmeal, and that they'll eat them. Then, you know, the dogs. And so I was gone. I was gone about a week, and it snowed in the meantime. I got about a foot of snow before I got back, and this Wolverine come to the cabin while I was gone, and he packed all those carcasses off, those marten carcasses, and I had a brand new pair of snowshoes standing alongside the cabin, and he took one of them snowshoes, and I don't know what he done. I never did find it. Of course, there's snow, and I looked all around there. But when he got me, he took one snowshoe, and he left the other.
So why was it they had a bounty on Wolverine anyway?
Huh?
Why was it they had a bounty on Wolverine?
Well, being destructive, you know, and breaking in cabins and all that stuff. That was the reason, you know.
Were there cases of them really cleaning out all the food in the cabin?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they can. They can be pretty destructive, you know. I had one. I had a cache one time. I took a big tree and sparred it off, you know, about that big around. Then I built a platform, but I used small poles, you know. And this Wolverine, he crawled up there, hanging on that there, and he chewed through them poles. And he got up in there, and I had quite a bit of grub in there, and I had a wood sleeping bag and a good tent and all kinds of stuff. And he just ripped everything up. But I found out then later, I got wise, Wolverine Bear's boat, you know, the best cache you can make for anything is just get a wire, a heavy wire or a piece of cable, and put it between two trees, and then get it up high where they can't reach it, and they can't get nothing, because they can't crawl that wire, you know, and hang it in the middle, you know, and far enough away that they can't reach it.
So what do you hang it in, just the bag or something?
Put it in anything and then throw something over it so it won't get wet, you know, canvas or... I've had them come to them... that's how I used to make my caches in late years. And I've one cache one time I left for 2 years, I didn't go back at stuff. And they come to it, and they had all the bark ripped all off the trees, you know, where they're crawling up to trying to get that, get the food. You knew something was in there, you know, they see it and they smelled it, you know. That dry stuff, flour and beans and stuff like that, you know.
So how would you hoist all that stuff up there?
Build a ladder, yeah, just build a ladder, and mm-hmm. Bear or nothing can get it, you know. And just get it up plenty high, you know. You got nothing. That's the best cache there is. They can never get it. You can't hardly build anything foolproof for them if they want to get in there. It seems they get in.
Well, that's about right. I heard about this one guy built a cache, something like you're just saying, you know, but he had a drum, and he filled that up, but he had it suspended by a wire going up to maybe a cross pole or something like that. And this bear come along and try to get in that drum, you know, and he just took his arm and swatted it. Well, it swung out all right, but it came back too. The bear just looking there, whoa, he hits him in the head, and this guy's sitting in the cabin just watching the bear play with the jam. Almost knocked him out, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's his revenge cache.
Yeah. Well, what are there any kind of animals that you felt really close to? Like, just, you know, like bears and wolverine, that's something to watch out for. Were there any animals that you just felt like didn't make any trouble and you really liked having around?
Yeah, well, they were the only, in the summertime, the bears are the worst, you know. Of course, the wolverine, they'd get in your cabin anytime, you know, if they could get in there, smell something in there. Well, that first year, when we were went up and trapping up Hess, me and that picture of Jim Pickens, we built four cabins in there, went back there that year, when that was the year after we got out of the Army. And I went into Livin' Good to get some grub. And that's about 40 miles out we were, and he stayed, and he's going to get a moose, you know. And he shot a moose. Well, I was gone. I was gone about 4 days, 4 or 5 days. I think I got back the 40 or the 50, I don't know which. And he built a cache in trees, you know, just a rough one. And he said the moose, when I come back, he said the moose probably weighed a small moose, about 400. And he put it up there. And but that night when he was walking home, he had to go through a big niggerhead flat. Well, he see this wolverine running across this flat. And so when I come back, he said, I shot a moose. He said, he said, let's go and cache it better, he said, so the wolverines can get it. He said, when I was coming home that night, I seen one, he said, right close to where he got the moose. So it was about the fifth day we went back there. And the wolverines been up at that cache, and they had all the meat off the cache. That's all he could find, his bones and that laying around there. They just cleaned that thing up slick. There had to be a few of them, you know. There was nothing. The ground was all tore up. With it.
And we knew, 5 days, huh? 5 days?
Yeah, it was, and he was gone from the time he...
Well, it didn't take him long.
Yeah. Yeah, they just ripped everything up.
Do you ever hear any stories that Native people have about wolverines?
Well, a lot of you hear all kinds of stories. Now, you hear all these stories. You pick up books where a trapper, he traps all his life. He probably only catch a wolverine. That's just nothing but a lot of... Why? Wolverine's nothing. They're the easiest thing there is to catch. You know, they'll walk into just about anything. All you got to do is tie a chunk of hide or some damn thing to a tree, you know, and set a bunch of traps around, and they'll come through. They'll plow right into it. The only time to get a little smart is if you nip one once in a while. Get one, you know, and he pulls out his toes or something. Then they're a little cagey, you know, but pretty careful. But wolves are way harder to trap than cayuse and that stuff than wolverine. Yeah, I never had no trouble with them. I never seen yet where any of them got on my line or anything that I couldn't catch them, you know. Catch them right away. I never did. There never was no many of them around wherever I was trapping. I think the best I done was 1 year I got 6 or 7, I forget what it was. And I only got $6 or $7 a piece for them then, too. That was all they was worth. And, of course, they had that $15 bounty then.
What was other fur worth, though?
Huh?
What was other fur worth those years? How much could you get for, say, a lynx or a marten?
Well, at that time, lynx wasn't bad. At that time, you could get $50 for a good lynx. If you had a bunch of lynx, you could average $35, $40, you know, just about, you know. Marten was good then. You get $40, $45 for marten. Fox wasn't too good. Oh, you could get $35, $40 for a good cross fox, you know, something like that. 15 so for a good red. And probably $75, something like that, for silver, something like that. There isn't. But anything you bought then was cheap. It was pretty cheap, you know, compared to now, you know.
Well, what about moose? You know, what kind of things did you learn about moose, or did you have happen with moose?
Well, moose, there's a lot of moose around, you know. It was no trouble getting moose if you wanted them, you know. In running season, you know, you never know one of them might come after you or something like that. The noise, you know, they're not too scared most of any noise, you know. But that same particular year, when I was out there, me and Jim, I went to town another time where we bought a lot of grub, I did, and I airdropped it, you know. And he stayed out at this one cabin, and I come in with an airplane. Lon Brennan had from here. He had an airplane. He had a flying service, that is, and he dropped the grub. I kicked it out, you know. And he was out right by the cabin, and he put up a flag, you know, a target place so we could see. There's a nigger had flat there, so he started dropping the food around there in one spot. And we dropped some traps and all kinds of stuff. And he went out that one morning, he said, and of course, we had two dogs with us out there too. And we hadn't had them just running loose, you know, and they were pretty good dogs, you know, and stayed around. And this one dog took off in the brush. And he said he don't know what made him, but that morning he said when he went out there, he took his rifle, and it was right close to the cabin. Wasn't any further than, from here to the NC store there, you know, old NC. And all at once, he puts up this pole with a flag, white flag on. He's sitting there, standing there, you know, and he hears this noise coming through the brush. And this dog went out there, and he jumped this moose. And this moose is chasing the dog, and of course the dog's coming right to him, and of course he got his rifle, he nailed the moose. And the moose had one horn knocked off, and it must have been in a fight with another one, I know. And he said, I don't know why he took my rifle, he said, so close to the cabin, he said, good thing I had it. Well, that one year, you know, I tell you, when the snow was so deep, the moose would get on your trail. But I had another funny experience with moose. That's when I was trapping beaver on Hess Creek there, and we had a big blow. And I was following the creek, and I couldn't ride. I had five dogs then, and I couldn't ride on a sled. The trail was full of snow, you know, and off. And I had some trailers, snowshoes. I was running behind the sled. The dogs is going, and I just running behind them. They couldn't go very fast. And I had my rifle. I always carried my rifle. I had that in a sled. And I come around a bend, and there was a young cow moose with willows that's hanging over. She was feeding, you know, off the browsing. And of course, when she seen the dogs and the dogs seen her, well, she run off up the creek, and dogs made a big lunge, you know, and they got away from me, you know. I wasn't hanging on the handlebars anyway, but I knew they wouldn't go very far. They wouldn't leave me, you know. They were pretty good dogs, pets. And I had a beaver set just a little ways from there, and I come around another long bend, and yeah, the dogs, they was laying by this beaver house. But before I got there, about halfway where the dogs took off and that, I hear a noise up on the bank. And there was a big boulder. And he was running back and forth on the bank. And it was a steep bank. He couldn't get down on a creek. Oh, it was about a 10, 12-foot drop, I'd say. So he run in. He run in the woods. There's some woods there, and while he just slept, you know. And I was going up to the dogs, and Well, before, when I got a couple hundred feet from the dog sled, well, this big bully come running out of the brush. He run right to the dog sled, you know. And, of course, the dog, they all whipped around and got tangled up there trying to get after him, you know. And he wouldn't move. He was just running back and forth, all right. And, of course, here I was in the middle of the creek, so I started hitting, looking for a get off out of bank, get up a tree or something. I didn't have no gun. And the dogs is raising heck, and he wouldn't leave. And so I sneaked around the in a brush there, and I got the moose. She's on the other side of the sled, and the dogs is there, and so I made a run. I made a run for the sled, and I got my rifle, you know, and then I didn't want him, you know, and so I fired a couple of blasts, you know, just kind of close by him, you know, up, and all at once, then he just turned. He didn't leave for a little while, and all at once he turned around. He just took off like mad through the brush, and of course that was the last I seen of him. But you never know what they're gonna do, you know.
What do you think he was trying to do?
I don't know. I can't figure him chasing them, chasing that dog team.
Did he go and kick him or anything?
No. He was. I'd say at times he wasn't over. Oh, he was closer than from here. He wasn't over 50, 75 feet away from him. 50 feet anyway. And they were all just a barking, you know, and trying to get on him. Of course, he's all fouled up in the sled and the harnesses, you know. But the well, generally, you know, they'll take off something like that. But and that was way in the spring of the year, too. That was about way in the last part of March, you know.
Well, when you're out, and you're out all winter, and you see things start to change in the spring, what animals do you notice? I mean, do you look for certain animals to come back in the spring? Or you ever look forward to that?
Well, you know, when you're in, how about the same, you know what I mean, you got there's never no change, you know, and wherever you're trapping, what's around there, you know. But then in the spring of the year, you know, they're moving around more. Of course, you're not trapping then, you know, land animals, you're not trapping, you know, they get out and move around more. That's when, you know, they're breeding and everything, you know, and then marching through there, you know, later part. Then you're trapping beaver, you know.
What kind of experiences you have with wolves?
Well, I never had no. I've been around, you know, going down the trail and hear 'em howl, you know, and stuff like that, you know. But never. All these stories about you read about where they're attacking people. And
you ever know anybody that got attacked by wolves?
I can't. There's only one story I know where, it happened to this David Tobuk, living up there in Latina. He's dead now, but him and he was a kid. He was telling me that him and his father and his mother, they were with dogs, and I don't know, he's 6, 7, 8 years old, something like that. They were coming. They come off on a bank, steep bank, kind of get across this creek. And when they were crossing the creek, got on the creek, this bunch of wolves was coming up the creek. And they all hit together, you know, the wolves and him and the dogs, they start fighting. Of course, the dogs and the wolves are fighting. The old man, he was trying to get the gun out of in a sled, you know, and it was a real mix-up. And he said he don't know. He had a scar on his face, and the dogs is over him and the wolves, and he don't know what got him. They nailed him on if it was the dogs or the wolves. And finally, I guess the old man got the gun out and started shooting. They took off, you know. But that's the only time I ever know of anybody. And that was just an accident there, you know. They're all excited, you know, the wolves and the dogs. And but I run onto, in my time, a few big bunches. One time about 15. And I had dogs, and they were coming down the hill, and they were just, they heard me, you know, and the moment they heard me, they turned around, and they started running back up this hill. Well, it was kind of quite a ways, but I emptied my rifle at them, took a chance I might nail one, you know, but I never did. But they were going the other way. They never did try to come after me or nothing. But I've had them come right to my cabins, and I was gone. Had meat there one time on that West Fork cabin, you know. I showed you that picture of that big cabin. I had a caribou laying out there one time, and they come right there to the cabin. When I was gone about a week, I guess. And they practically chewed that caribou up, eat it up, right to the cabin. They come, a whole bunch of them. And then another time there was a bunch when I was trapping up hens. They come to the cabin. I shot a moose that fall, and I had him hanging by the cabin. And I went to set my traps, and I was coming back to him. I was by my main cabin. When I was coming back, I had to go out, run on the creek. And the dogs got kind of excited, you know, and I knew there was something around. I thought maybe a moose or something, you know. And when I come up the bank, and the cabin was right up the bank, just a little ways from the creek, and see nothing around, and I thought maybe somebody too. It was, the cabin is about 25 miles from Living, and I thought maybe somebody might have come out to see me. You know, I knew guys that had dogs, and didn't see no smoke or nothing. And but when I got to the cabin, these moose, wolves, a whole bunch of them. They're right to the meat. And if I'd have been gone, you know, another day, they'd have cleaned it up, you know. That's what they were after. And they had trails all over there. So I run them off. And when they hear me, you know, and I looked around, I see all these trails. And so I stayed there a day or two. And I went down the creek, and they've been all over there, you know. And I thought, well, they'll maybe come back. To myself, and I had a lot of big traps there, and I set traps all over them trails, you know, and they never did come around that cabin all winter, never showed up. But talking about wolves, I know two or three, right out here one time, there was a guy cutting wood out here, Fred Gustafson. He's cutting wood out the river. And you know right where that makes that bend by Hagen's there? Well, I was out there too. It is in the fall of the year. I was cutting a little wood. And I was coming home, and I had a 25-20 rifle. And I was coming, it's a little dusk it was. And this big Fred, I seen him just before he made that bend. He was coming out of the woods and walking for town here on that state stretch. So I start walking fast. I was going to catch up with him, you know, and walk in town with him. And when I got around the bend, just about that time, a lone wolf stepped out of the brush and is walking right behind him. He wasn't over, I don't think, over 30 feet to 40 feet behind him. He's walking behind him. And he, of course, he didn't know. And there wasn't much snow, only I'd say about 2-3 inches of snow. And I couldn't shoot the wolf because he was right in line with Fred. And I stayed behind them, and there was a big meadow there. And I thought maybe when I got over there, I could get off the side, you know, and get a shot at him. But he followed them for, 200-300 feet, I guess. And then all at once, he just jumped off in the brush. Of course, I was the last to him. And of course, I went up and I told him, I said, "Say, Fred, do you know?" Stopped him. I said, "Do you know wolf was from there?" "Yeah." He said, "You know, sweet." But that was a funny.
He believed you when you told him?
Yeah, well, he believed it, sure. But a guy, I got, there's another, a fellow lived in Rampart, told me, Clem Anderson was his name. He went up from, and I know he was lying about it, but it sounds like it, but he was the guy that wasn't the type of guy, you know, to tell his story if it wasn't so. And he went up, he was to get a trap above Rampart, and he went up there before the ice started running in the river, you know, and with a boat. And he started building a cabin. And he pitched a tent, and he was living in a tent, and he built a cabin, and he had one window in it, and he said after he got the cabin, he had his bunk there, pole bed, and he's years ago, they send bacon. Used to come in and had a tough kind of a skin all over it, you know, to preserve it, you know. And he had a slab of bacon, and he said it was in that skin, you know, and it is just kind of like celluloid. It was, I don't know what they called it anyway, but he said he had it hanging on a ridge pole when it was poles low, he said, and he's sitting in his bed, on his bed there, he said, and he's looking out this window, and he see this wolf come out of the brush, and he said he walks right up to this, he's going to get that, you know, he smelled that bacon, and he said he's got his rifle, and he's got a rifle, and he said he's just got it standing out the door, and he said he opens the door up real easy, and he reaching for the gun, he said just about that time, he said, the young wolf, he stepped off in a brush, and he said he took his rifle in, and he set it by his bed, he said he just might come back, thinking to himself, something like that, you know. And he said he's sitting there, he said, same place, and he looks up, he said, and the bear is, not the bear, the wolf, he said, looking through the window at him. And he said he reaches over, and he grabs the rifle real easy-like, and he said just about the time he gets it, start raising it up, he said, the old wolf, he's gone, he said, he steps in a brush again. And he said he's thinking about that wolf, and then come night again, he said, oh, he'll never be back here again, he said, that for sure, but he said he's still sitting on the same place, he said, in the bed, and he said he's got his rifle across his knees, and he said he's sitting there, and he looks up, he said, the old wolf is looking through the window, he said, and he brings it around, he said, just about the time he gets it around, the wolf is gone. He said, that's the last time he'd come back. But that's funny, you know. And I know he wouldn't. I know the guy was the truth. Well, another story on the wolves, and that I, too. When I was trapping on Hiss, there was a guy there, Frank Sisson, trapping below me. And he'd go out early and fix up his trap line. I used to go out early, too. I'd walk out. I'd come out. It was about in October. And when I come up there, there was an old cabin there that some trappers built before the war, and it was pretty, he was staying, and he was building another one, a new one, and I helped him finish it, of course. And he's sitting by this fire. He's got a fire, campfire, in front of this old cabin. He had no stove in there. And this wolf comes right up to the fire while he's sitting there. And he reaches right over, the wolf's only about 10 feet from the fire, reaches over and he grabs his rifle and he nailed it, you know. And I come from town then, out just about a day or two after, and he had to hide there, he just skinned it out, and it's a black wolf. But it was an old one, and it had no teeth, or I guess it couldn't rustle, it was poor too, you know. But it come right up to that fire. Huh. It's something hard to figure them out. Lee Edwin and his kid, they were trapping up Dugan Creek in Beaver, and they were coming in the spring right by the bluff there, you know. And out of the brush, they got a 30-06 with them, but they shot up all their ammunition. They only got one shell, and there's 7 or 8 wolves come out right to the dog team, and they run alongside the dogs, and they up and they get this. They got one wolf with the shell. They had that one shell, and they was right around the dogs, a whole bunch of them. But that's as close as they know. At once they took off. Now you can figure that out, you know. But I have seen them going down the trail, you know, where they'd be off on a high on a hill, you know, looking at you on some point or something, a howl, you know, or something like that, you know. And, but they were quite far away, you know.
What do you think about all these stories that you read about, you know, mostly outside, you know, stories about the Alaskan wilderness and Jack London and those kind of things about living out in the woods with all the animals?
Well, I tell you, I lived out in the woods all my life, ever since I was a kid, and a lot of it is just made up, you know, a lot of that. It's just a silly story, that's all, you know. And a lot of the public's gullible, they'll buy up anything, you know. I know all kinds of trappers, and I never... the only thing that I know of, like wolves, never... bear is the worst, you know. A lot of guys have been attacked with bears. Guy lived right over here, Harry Ryder. Well, the dogs brought the bear to him too, you know. And then by the time he could get his gun off and his pack board, they mauled him, and his bear did. And he laid there for 2-3 days, and you know, not conscious, at the mouth of the Stewart River. And the steamboat was going to Dawson. Then the dogs, they run the bear off, you know, and. And they see these dogs milling around, you know, the pilot, so they pulled in there, and the only thing that saved him, and they got him up in Dawson to the hospital, and he come out of it, you know. He's a case like that. Well, then the bear that broke into Strandberg's camp, you know, when the Bill was cleaning up the camp, he come back and he killed him, you know. Yeah, the bears are the worst. Well, they get, you know, a lot of them big brownies, you know, on the coast, you know, they get a lot of, they get guys every now and then, you know, and well, even up here. No, I the bear, they're hard. You never know what they're going to do, you know. Especially you run onto them, you know, if you make a kill. The brownies are the worst, like you make a kill, you know, and you come onto them, you know. And of course, they want nothing coming around their meat, you know.
Do you still always carry a gun with you when you go out?
Oh, yeah, I always. When I'm out in the woods like that by myself and that, I always got my rifle because I run onto them bears lots of times, you know, and... close, you know, I didn't, but a time or two they have come after me, you know, but you never know. Well, I was fishing at the landing here one year, and this bear was coming to the smokehouse, getting the fish, and one morning I went out there early to get the fires going, you know, and I was chopping wood there, and I had two or three fires going. We had this long smokehouse. And while I was chopping wood, I got fires going already. I picks up an arm full of wood and turns around. I'm going to go in the smokehouse, and this bear is in there. He's just a knocking fish right to left after I'm right between the fires. And I was cutting wood out there. So I dropped the wood down, and the cabin wasn't too far, so I went over there to get my rifle and get rid of him, you know, and when I come back, he was gone. And so he never, all day, we kept a gun around. It didn't figure we'd have to get rid of him, you know. And so that night, this guy I was with, Jerry Saunders, he had a couple of loose dogs around. He knew there was something around, you know, and so he had a trapping trail, and I said, I'm going to go out that trail, Jerry, and see if that bear, if I may run onto that bear, get rid of him, because he get in the smokehouse at night and he's sleeping, and he'll fix it good, you know, the fish. And so I had a 25 high power, and I put the shell in a barrel, and I'm walking down this trail, and there's all kinds of these high bush cranberries, and they grow there, and there's, you know, right over the trail, and there's, and this bear, he was laying right in a trail, and I walked right onto him. He couldn't see him, you know. I wasn't over, off, I don't think 5 feet away from him, and he jumped up, you know. But I had my rifle, I had a shell in a barrel and everything, and I whips around, you know, right now, you know, I just swung around, I just touched one off, you know, and I got him a first shot, I got him right in the neck, too, and killed him, and I don't know what he'd have done, you know, I didn't give a chance to find out, but he was right on top of him before he moved, you know. And another funny thing happened with Barrier. There's a guy fishing and trapping down near Alex Seaholm, about 15 miles below here. And his smokehouse is quite a ways from where he was living, his cabin. And he said this bear was coming in there and getting fish. So he's got to get rid of him. So that one evening, he puts all kinds of, he's got the, oh, they dry fish 2-3 tiers. He puts a bunch of poles up there, and he said he's gonna lay for the bear and get him. And he's got his rifle there, and he said he's waiting there. And in the meantime, he fell to sleep. He said while he's asleep, this bear come back, and he was baling some dry fish there too. And they put, like I was telling you, 30 to 50 pounds in a bale of fish. And he said the bear, he took a whole bale of fish that night while he was up there sleeping, and he laid for him. He said he never did come back. He don't know. He said that was the funniest thing. He said he stayed there for about a week. He said that bear never did come back. He said he never did show up. Oh, he said he, now that, things like that are really funny, you know, the way,
Did it, well, what was that guy Alex Seaholm like?
He was an old timer that been there for years and years. He trapped and fished. That's all he done.
Did he mine too?
No, there's quite a story on him. He was an old timer. He come when he was young, and he was prospecting. There's 4 or 5 of them, he said, and they landed where they made the big strike in Nome, but on a beach there, and they camped there. And then him and these guys, they run over in the hills, you know, looking around prospecting. And they were gone 2-3 months, and they never found anything. And in the meantime, while they were gone, right where they camped, that on that beach line, that's where it was really rich, you know. But they never figured there was some, they found gold. And he says when they come back, there was tents all over there. There was in there already stampeding. And he quit looking for gold. He said, right there. He said, there he is sitting right on and walked away from him. He said, they're only, but nobody figured, you know, nobody figured there'd be any gold on the beach there. Then he trapped her till the time he got too old, and he moved down to 10. From there, then he went to the Pioneer home.
So you knew him pretty well?
Oh, yeah, I knew him well. I knew him.
He make a lot of homebrew over there?
No, Alec never was. He used to drink a little bit, but he done his when he come to town. He'd have a few beers or something. He didn't make any or.
Were there other people lived over there at his camp, too? Were there other people lived over there at his camp, too?
No, after he pulled out of there, when he give up trapping, well, he wanted to give me the trap line, his whole outfit, but I was good friends with him. I wasn't that interested in that neck of the woods. There's a lot of trappers around there. Then the native there, David Hendry from Tanano, he bought it off of him. But nobody's been there for years. I guess the cabins are all caved down and everything now. Nobody.
You know, you talk about walking around a lot of times with with a shell in your chamber, you know, right in the barrel. You ever have any kind of accident with a gun?
I never carry a shell in a barrel. The only time I ever put a shell in a barrel is if I'm hunting and I see something or I know something around, then I'll put one in where I figure. But I never. I always got plenty of time to get one in. I don't carry one in a sled or in a, well, if I'm absolutely sneaking up on something or something like that. No time.
You hear of other guys have gun accidents?
Well, there's a lot of guys got shot that way too, you know. I know a lot of guys that guns went off on them, you know, told me themselves, you know, and hook up on something. And no, that's something I never do. I don't know if anybody around here ever, anything like that, ever did get shot, you know. Of course, a lot of places they have, you know that.
Oh, you hear about it, but yeah. I never know anybody.
I don't know of anybody either, you know, I can't.
Well, kind of change the subject a little bit, I got a question. You know, sometimes people say that guys that come up here around Alaska, and well, if they're going to strike it rich, they're going to strike it rich, you know. That's one thing. But if they're not going to strike it rich, if they're just going to live here, a lot of times people say, well, what are you going to do that for? You're going to miss out on everything, you know. Do people ever tell you that?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people, they'll tell you, they say, well, you're out of your mind going and living out in the woods all winter by yourself trapping. Well, it all depends how you like it. Well, they're city, you want to be around the city. Well, I never was one of them guys. And then there's all kinds of guys like me the same. They want to be out in the woods, you know. They like it out in the woods. Oh, I know a lot. I've had a lot of them. You must be crazy living out there by yourself all winter and stuff like that. It don't bother me. Well, even like, Dixie there, you know, she'd just soon be out in the woods as she likes to be out in the woods, you know. Never don't bother her, you know. I used to be on my own pretty all the time. Well, a lot of time prospecting that, you know, and that you go broke. Well, I'd have to go and make another grub stake, you know.
Well, how about the other people in your family? You know, they ever get hold of you and ask you how come you're still up here in Alaska? Why don't you go back outside?
No. The people, my family, not they're all... A lot of them, you know, they, especially my brothers, you know, they worked in the woods and done a lot of on their own, you know. You know, the hills used to be full of guys around here, you know, trappers and prospectors just lived out there all the time, you know, up and down these rivers and all over, you know, go out in the fall of the year and never come back till in the spring, you know, till the rivers or creeks would break up that before the airplanes and that, you know, too many airplanes around come out. Now a lot of they fly in, you know, and got their own airplanes and do a lot of that. Nobody's isolated anymore like they used to be. You know, you get out 100 miles, 150 miles when you had dogs, and now you didn't think about coming into town breaking trail or till the season was over, you threw trapping or...
What do you think that change has done to people?
Well, people change, you know, it's... Look at around here. You don't see anybody going out here hardly staying anymore. All these guys that trap and got snow goes, they're gone and they're home every night. If they, they don't stay out over one or two nights, the most one night that I see.
Well, what do you think that's good for? I mean, like, you think that's a good change or is that a bad change?
Well, it was different when we trapped. It all depends how a guy wants to work at it. If that's the way you want to trap, you know, that's the way you do it. If you don't want to stay out, well, you come home. Well, we went out. We stayed. Like when I was trapping up Hess, and that's pretty big country. Radios and all that come in, a lot of guys' radios, you know. Takes the loneliness away, too, you know, like you can listen to the news and stuff. Not that it ever bothered me too much. I used to take one with me or had it in my home cabin, you know, find out what's going on.
Well, what did you miss most when you're out then?
Well, I don't know. I was always contented. I miss nothing. I like, you know, what I was doing. I like to trap and stay out. And when me and my brother were together, then he'd go one way and I'd go the other. And every week or 4 or 5 days or 6 days, we'd be together again, you know, stay a couple of days. And it all depends. Just like we're talking about, a lot of people can't take it. They can't stay by themselves, you know. There ain't too many. The percentage is small, you know, that can get out and live by themselves, that it don't bother.
Was it hard for you to come into town and to be around people a lot?
Oh, well, when you come into town and you're around people, you know, and you got a lot of, you do a lot of things then, you know, and you know, talking about when years ago, you know, all these cricks out here, people, they lived out there all the time, you know, they didn't, they just lived out there, they just come in once in a while into town to get their supplies or a celebration, you know, Christmas or Thanksgiving or 4th of July or something like that, you know, St. Patrick's Day, that was always a big celebration, and hang around 2-3 days or more, only some, all depends, some get beard up and stay a week or so, and some just a day or two and go back right away, and up to the guy.
Well, do you miss having those kind of guys around?
Well, yeah, they were quite interesting. Most of the guys, you know, they were all about the same caliber we were, you know, all had the same thing to talk about. And
sometimes when you look around Manly and you think this is, it's just a real, really different way that people live. And
well, the living is altogether different now. You know what I mean? It's changing, you know.
Mm-hmm. What do you think's going to happen?
Well, the country's getting, we all know, you know, the country's getting more filled up with people. You know, people are spreading out more than when I first come around. You know, well, the population is greater now too than 40 years ago, and people are spreading out. And
is it greater even around here without having guys in all the creeks?
Well, it right around here, it ain't grow too much. In fact, the population through this vicinity is down more than when I first come here, when all the mines is running and that. There's less people. The people, so many of them pulled out for the cities and that, you know. Easier to make a living. Now, up and down this river, there was just full of people, trappers and natives lived there and that. They're all gone. They all moved to towns, you know. There's a lot of people don't want to live out in the hills now, you know, even the ones that's born here, you know.
Well, if this keeps up going the way it is now, what's going to happen, do you think?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say, but there'll be more. See, what's the trouble now is times are good. You can go into these towns and it's easy, pretty easy to make a living, you know. Big wages, you know, and everything. These miners can't pay that kind of wages. They're grounding that good. And one thing I think is, I can see it myself, is all this giveaway programs they got, you know, like food stamps and all that. People don't have to work. You can live without working. You know that, if a guy wants to go that route. When I was growing up around here and that, you had to get out and make your own living. If you didn't, you went hungry. Everybody was working, doing something.
So what's that going to mean to people then? What's that going to do?
Well, that don't do it. Anytime you start getting anything for nothing and everything, you know, that just breaks the people down, you know that. Especially the younger growing up, when they can get that stuff before even they have to go to work. Well, why go to work or do anything? That's the attitude they take. You know, just like they're talking now, there are people that lived along the rivers, you know, they fished and had gardens and they trapped, and there was nobody on any relief, kind of relief. When the guys, the older fellas got older, you know, that they couldn't work, you know, the old timers, well, the territory then, you know, they pensioned them off, give them a pension, and
how about hospital and health care? What did people do for that?
Well, at that time, I don't know, there was no such a thing. People didn't get it. They had these native service hospitals, you know. They take them in. But like, I don't know, when you was desperate, they take you in, you know. They had to take you in.
Well, what would a guy do if he got sick out on his line someplace?
Well, if you didn't have no help, it's just too bad if you couldn't make it in. There's a lot of them just swallow the barrel.
Swallowed the barrel?
Yeah, well, you know what that is, committing suicide.
You mean if they broke a leg or something?
Well, when I dragged in one guy there, he had a stroke and he had to do it. He committed suicide. He couldn't. Well, it was just tough on them. If they didn't make it in, they either died out there when they got sick, you know. They found a lot of guys, you know, dead in their cabins, you know. Like I picked up that guy on a West Fork. He just got sick and died, you know. Nobody around to take care of him. That happens all the time, you know.
How about if a guy did go into town and try to get help?
Well, you could get help, all right. The people themselves is pretty good at help, but you didn't have all this Medicare or anything them days like you got now, you know, and for older people. And it was a lot harder to get than now. It's easy now, you know, compared to them days. Well, like them guys years ago when they had no Social Security and that, you know, these old loggers and all that moving around and that. When they got old, they had nothing. They had no pensions because they never stayed in one place. You know, they kept moving around. They never had no Social Security or retirement or nothing like that. You know, well, it's the only ones had it that worked someplace and stayed steady day in and day out. But now you can move around, do whatever you want, you know, as long as you're still covered, you know, with Social Security, wherever you go work or... Even in since I've been around, since Social Security come out, well, I paid into it ever since, but I never paid into it myself, even when I, you know, when I was mining, and I never worked. Steady, you know what I mean? I'd probably work 1 year, maybe or a few months, and then maybe I'd be trapping or in prospect, and I wouldn't pay a dime into it for 2-3 years, maybe. Well, then, but eventually, when it come to retiring after all them years since it started, it's built up a little bit. It's enough to live on.
So they got you for Social Security anyway, huh? They got you for Social Security.
Well, yeah, every job I work on, I had to pay it, you know. Uh-huh. And then when you made so much money, your taxes, like mining and that, you paid it too, you know. Uh-huh. But it wasn't too much.
Well, that's a pretty good deal.
Well, sure. That's one of the best things that ever happened for the working man.
What other sorts of good things happened for working men?
Well, you know, they got lots of better conditions, you know. In hospitalization, that's another thing. You got your Medicare, you work, you got your Medicare, you get and you can go on now, even if you're crippled up, you know, on that, you can go now sick, even if you're not 65, you know, you can go in before that, you know, they'll take care of you. Look at now, they got all these pioneer homes, and they're good homes, you know. A guy has lived in that's in a country or something happens to him, they'll take him in there, and he's got real good care. They feed him good and medical attention and everything. I can remember years ago when these around them old loggers and that was get sick, you know, and they were old, they had nothing, you know, they didn't save no money up, you know, and when they take them in, but none of it was very good, you know. They used to say, them old guys, when they'd go in, now they give me the black bottle, you know, get rid of them, that was... Yeah, you got a lot of benefits now. Well, it's like now even a guy, a veteran, you know, he's pretty well taken care of, a guy that was a veteran, you know, in any kind of service. Well, years ago they took care of their a little too, but not like they do now. You get sick out here, you're a veteran in the Army, you can run, put in a call, and they'll come right out here and pick you up and take you at a chopper or whatever. You know, no strings attached.
Do you have any benefits like that, being a veteran of the Army?
No, not before, you know.
Well, right now.
Well, I can go in a veterans hospital and that, being a veteran, you know, anytime anything happens to me. And I'm old enough now, I got my Medicare too, you know, I can go to any one of them guys in town, they're doctors. And then up here, they got another good law, old Greenan got that in when he was a senator, any Alaska veteran. if they can't see, there's no veteran hospitals up here. This Bassett Hospital will take you in, but it's not a veteran's hospital. Like, they got them outside, you know, and they'll take you in Anchorage, too. But he got that law in effect that you can go in one of these, any of these, if not one of these hospitals, you know, like Memorial, any of them, then the veterans will pay for it. If you got to have an operation of some kind that they can't take care of, you know.
Have you ever had to give a call and have them come and pick you up?
No, I never had. I went in and had an operation on my eye and under the veterans and. No, you get pretty good. They take pretty good care of the veterans now, you know, and pretty good pensions, and now that they're really bunged up, you know.
Well, you know, this is kind of changing the subject a little bit, but earlier you were talking about, being in the woods and that Dixie's not, you know, she's not afraid to be in the woods. She likes to be out there. Did you used to take her out with you?
Well, I used to take her when I was trapping around here. I'd take her with me and that, you know, and, yeah. And, of course, she lived out quite a bit when I was mining, you know, out in the mines and stuff. Mm-hmm. All summer long, you know.
How old was she when you first started taking her out trapping with you?
Well, when I first started taking her on little with me trapping, that she was up where she could handle herself pretty good, you know, 12 years old or something like that, 11, 12, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She never went out no long periods or nothing like that, you know. Just.
Mm-hmm. Did she really want to go out with you?
Oh, yeah, she was all, yeah, she liked to go out.
Did you try to teach her a lot of things about being out there?
Well, yeah, I showed her, you know, how to trap and that, but she never did do it on her own, you know what I mean? Of course, she was with me and see how I done it and everything. But she's pretty handy, you know, she can chop wood. I used to take her out with me and. When I was cutting wood and all that, she's pretty good with an axe and that. She can better than lots of men, I know. Not bad at all with an axe or a saw, like saw wood, you know, a sweet saw.
How about hunting? Did she?
She never done. She's hunted. She's never killed no big game, but she's been worked at it, you know. And. She likes to hunt, you know. She's been out with me hunting, you know, and hunting ducks and different things, you know, birds and. Well, she was with me a couple of times and I kill moose and stuff like that.
When we were talking about animals before, we didn't talk at all about birds. How about birds? What kind of birds?
Well, you know, fool hens, grouse and pintails and. Stuff like that. Ducks. Depends what time of the year, of course. Willow grouse, ptarmigan. That's all we have around. The only cat we got here, you know, and four.
Well, you know. Raising a child, what kind of things did you think about that you wanted to teach her?
Well, I wanted her to know a lot of things, you know, about, like, how taking care of herself, you know, in the woods, you know, how to chop wood and all that stuff. I learned in that and showed her how, and, of course, with me, she see me, and, They catch on right away, you know, and how to do it. And of course, you gotta learn a lot of things too. You gotta use your own common sense, you know, judgment. See, a lot of us guys had it different than a lot of fellas, you know, that we're raised different, you know, raised like that, you know, out right away, cutting wood and all that stuff. For some guys that was to come out in this country, you know, turned out good men too, you know, but they had to learn it all. They were raised in a city, you know, never had to get out and chop wood and all that stuff, you know, or build cabins. But then a lot of them, you know, with a little common sense, they caught right on, you know. I know a lot of guys raised in big cities, you know, friend trappers, and then turned out they're good trappers, you know. They learn how. You just got to get out and start doing it, you know. You can't, a lot of guys will come in, well, how do I trap, or this and that. Well, you got to get out, and sure, you can explain to a guy a lot, but then you got to, You gotta just use a little common sense and on animals yourself, and how to set traps and catch them. You see the sign, you know, every where to set your snares and traps, and like some stuff like Martin and that. Well, anybody can trap them, you know. There's no skill to that.
What do you think the future of trapping is in the interior?
I don't know. It's look too good to me for. You know, it's different now too. There's so much different stuff coming on the market that they don't use for like they used to years ago. You know. They're synthetic stuff, you know. This alpaca stuff and feathered coats and all that, you know. And like when I was growing up or a kid or first come around, you know, everything was fur, you know. Now you see a little fur, but nothing like you used to. They got stuff that's now that's you know, different material. You can make parkies and all that stuff. It's not as good as fur when it comes to the real test, but it's good enough. You can get by with it. You know, it's not bad. But you take like now I know that I've had my own experience. You get up in a like up in the Arctic, you know, where you got all that wind and everything. There's nothing beats fur, you know. You can get out with this other stuff, and you can get by with it already in that. But it won't take the places like the Eskimos and that up there with, you know, mucklucks and all that stuff, you know, and polar bear pants and parkies and that out of reindeer and stuff like that. You take this other stuff. You can get by with it, but it's nothing like that, you know. That's so much better, you know. But then there's another thing on that. So many people don't know how to wear fur. You know what I mean? They if it gets wet, they don't know how to dry it out. They'll hang it over a stove or something, and you know what you got is all swiveled up and. Where you can take canvas or most of this stuff, your heat don't bother it, you know. Like you take now, like this insulated underwear and all that stuff, you know, out of down and all that. That's all pretty good stuff, you know, and warm and that. But I know I spent quite a bit of time myself up in Arctic, you know, and I know you can't beat fur when it comes to fur, for being the real, real thing.
Did you ever get cold when you're out?
Well, you all depend. If you got enough you got enough, whatever you're going to wear, you know, you never get cold. You gotta figure when you're going out, take enough when it's cold, because you can always take it off. But if you go out with nothing, you can never, it gets cold, you got nothing to put on. That's the way I always figured. When I trapped and that, I always had plenty. If I got warm, I'll take it off. Pack it in your sled. That's another thing about furs, you know. You can't, you get fur, you know, you can't move around. You got to know how to move around it, otherwise you start to sweat, you know. And well, with anything, you can do the same, you know.
What kind of clothes did you used to have when you were trapping?
Well, I never, up in this country, I just used regular wool, you know, and stuff like that, and some good canvas parkies, you know, and stuff like that, you know, and moose skin mitts or bear skin mitts and mucklucks or good moccasins, you know, on your feet. The main thing I always figured was have something to, in this country, to keep your hands, always have good hand gear and foot gear, so your feet wouldn't get cold, freeze your feet or your hands, because you could always start a fire, you know, around here in the timber, you know. Of course, you get up in the Arctic there where there ain't no timber, well, then you want to make sure you got plenty of fur or something that you can, like, you know, them Eskimos up there, and they go out, you know, if the big blows come or something, they got plenty of caribou, probably got a double caribou skin parkie or something, they can, and fur pants and everything, they'll crawl right in the snowbank or something and sweat it out, wait it out, they don't have to worry about. Dress plenty warm, and you got to be.
Well, where would you get your things like your mucklucks and your canvas parka? And
well, like around here, when I first come around, and that the natives is making all that stuff, you know, buy it off of them, you know, fur boots, and they made hat fur parkies in that year too, you know, caribou and muskrat or beaver, and then you could, like these canvas boots, you know, there's different stuff out now that the army's brought out and that, you know, and it's good stuff, you know, it's good enough.
You mean like those VB boots?
Like those canvas boots, you know, and with the horse hide bottoms, and then them, those all, horsehide, they call them Hudson Bay moccasins, you know, Ronnie, you've probably seen them. They were pretty popular at one time. Well, in fact, the Army had them up here years ago, even when they were in here. I mean, the old Army years ago. You know, you can, up here, a lot of the, you can get the fur liners, you know, like for your mitts and everything, and you can get for your hands, you know, and there ain't no trouble. And you can get out, and if you know how to take care of yourself, you can get out in some real cold weather. Don't bother you, you know. No, get enough clothes on and everything. You know, wool is good. But wool is no good. You gotta have, if you get in the wind, you gotta have something to break that wind. You know, wind will blow right through wool. You know, and of course, like you can get wet with wool too, and it'll still keep you warm. You know what I mean? Where you're in wet snow or something like that. But you gotta have something to break that wind. You know, like a good hood and a ruff, and that's your face and.
You ever have any times when you got real cold, like you didn't have the right clothes or something?
Oh, well, there's a lot of times that I've been cold, you know what I mean, but I never know that I couldn't you know, take care of myself. But when I was out trapping or something like that, if I figured I was getting cold, couldn't make a cabin or something, I'd build a fire. But, you know, you can always get out and jump around and run or something like that and warm yourself up too, you know. You don't just, like, I know there are probably a lot of cases where people just give up, you know, sat down or something. And there's a lot of people that don't know what, just don't know what to do in the cold, you know. There's a lot of people, you know. Well, you take some guy that probably is raised where it was warm, you know, in a warm climate. Well, he's, he's kind of.
Well, you ever get frostbite?
Oh, well, my face and stuff like that, that's nothing, you know.
Cheeks and nose.
Yeah, nose, yeah, that, yeah.
But you never lost anything?
No.
Well, what happens when guys get frostbite so they lose stuff? Is it because they're not being smart or what?
Well, yeah, just probably to get careless. And well, one thing, you know, for sure, like on your feet, you can, even if you got a lot of stuff, like socks or something, you don't want to, you want to have plenty loose, you know what I mean? So your toes or your feet can work around, same as your hands. You go out and regardless what you got, if you, everything is tight, you know, well, that don't do no good either. That's a bum deal. You go out, if it's real cold, you know, and you probably got liners and that, or good mittens, and you feel your hands are getting warm, start to get damp, you know, sweat a little, well, just take them out, you know, and let them dry in your mitts and put them back in, and that's the way you work it. A lot of guys can stand more cold than others, too. That makes a lot of difference. I seen guys up in this country be 40 below, 45 below, or colder, just with canvas gloves. And I've been with guys that way. I could stand a lot of cold when I was young in my hands too. But and I seen this guy lived up at the sawmill there, Mall. All he wore was one pair of socks and a pair of shoes in the winter. Could be 40 below, 45 below. Never bothered him at all, his feet.
Pretty good circulation, huh?
Yeah, just. Then there's other people I seen can't stand no cold at all in their feet or their hands. Well, like you say, you got good circulation and lots of people don't need much clothes. You know what I mean? And others got a bundle up, you know, like a.
How are you doing?
I think the tape's getting towards the end.
Well, I'm not cheap on electricity. See what time it is, huh? Here.